on the screen behind me. It's Luke 24, and I'm going to read from verse 1 to verse 12. The page is 1061. Starting at verse 1. On the first day of the week, very early in the morning, the women took spices they had prepared and went to the tomb. They found the stone rolled away from the tomb. But when they entered, they did not find the body of the Lord Jesus. While they were wondering about this, suddenly two men in clothes that gleamed like lightning stood beside them. In their fright, the women bowed down with their faces to the ground. But the men said to them, "Why do you look for the living among the dead? He is not here. He has risen. Remember how he told you while he was still with you in Galilee, 'The Son of Man must be delivered into the hands of sinful men. He must be crucified, and on the third day be raised again.' Then they remembered his words. When they came back from the tomb, they told all these things to the 11 and to all the others. It was Mary Magdalene, Joanna, Mary, the mother of Jesus, and many others with them who told this to the disciples. But they did not believe the women because their words seemed like nonsense. Peter, however, got up and ran to the tomb. Bending over, he saw the strips of linen lying by themselves, and he went away, wondering to himself what had happened."
Thanks, Josh. Now, I just want you to do a couple of things before I start. I just want you to take a deep breath in right now. Deep breath in. Deep breath out. Okay. Now, I want you to take your hands and just touch the person in front of you or next to you. Just touch them. It's all right. I told you to. Don't feel embarrassed. Now, I want you to just think in your head now. You can stop touching them now. Okay. Think in your head now. How much chocolate have you had today? Maybe the answer is not a lot. Maybe the answer is lots and lots. Just have a think. How much chocolate have you had today? Now what I want you to do is just turn to the person next to you. Just quickly, just say hello. That's it. Just say hello. And lastly, look at me. Well done. What an obedient bunch. Now, why can you do all that? Why can you breathe, touch, think, talk, and look? Why have you just been able to do all those things very easily? It was very easy for you. I looked at you all around. It's very easy to do. Why can you do that? Well, because you're alive. You can do all of those things because right now you're not dead. You're living, you're alive. That's why you could look at me, that's why you could hear me speak now, that's why you can breathe now. Not because you're dead, but because you're alive. All things that are very easy for you, simply because you're alive. Now, you can't do anything like this when you're dead, because when you're dead, you're just dead. You can do nothing. Now, all of us, I'm sure, know about death, and it's horrible, and it's awful. And I'm sure all of us know people that have died, and the worst thing about death is just it kills relationships, just like that, doesn't it? Absolutely kills relationships. And today's Easter Day, and the message of Easter that shouts loud and clear is that Jesus Christ isn't dead. He's not dead, he's alive. So he could do all the things that I asked you to do right now, today, at, I'm bad at telling the time, 4:47, wherever he is. He right now can breathe in and out. He right now can touch someone next to him. He can think, he can talk, he can look right now. Why can he do that? Because he's not dead. The message of Easter there is Jesus is alive. He's more alive than me and you. He's alive. And he's properly alive, actually alive. Not just in some sort of spooky spiritual sense. The Bible's messages, Christian messages, he's alive physically, really alive now. Now, the Bible word for all that is the resurrection. He was dead, but now he's alive. The Bible's word is he was resurrected. Now, the resurrection's got big things to say about Jesus, who he is, what it means for him. And the resurrection's got big things for you and me. It says big things, big implications, big benefits for us if we're his people. And we're going to think about them. But before we do, many people will say, why think about implications of the resurrection? Why start saying how good the resurrection is for me and you? It's just not true. So why think about the benefits? One friend called James, I make beer on Sunday nights with a load of lads. And all of them, apart from one of them, aren't Christians. And James, three Sundays ago, said to everyone, "You can't say there's proof of something that if the thing didn't happen. There is no proof for the resurrection." He said it's all a matter of faith. And now, pushing James a bit. What he meant by faith was wishful thinking. It's all wishful thinking, Matt. It's all made up. James did say Jesus is real. James said, well, he actually said he probably died. Then he went, no, he definitely died. He definitely died. Maybe not on the cross. But he stayed dead. You can't say, he said this really confidently, you cannot say he rose from the dead. Matt, there is no proof. Now he is confident. Everyone else is nodding away, thinking, yep, there is no proof. Confident until I looked at him and said, well, what proof have you looked at? What evidence have you telling me doesn't exist? And he sheepishly, bravely said, well, I haven't looked at the proof. I just don't believe it. It can't happen. He said, and I think rightly, he said, dead people don't come back from the dead. Dead people don't come alive. And he's right. And the Christian message isn't that dead people come back from the dead. The Christian message is, one man did. One man did, and his name is Jesus. Now, we had on the screens and in your Bibles, Josh read Luke 24, and I love it. It's an account of the first day when Jesus came back from the dead, and I just love how real it is. It's just so real, and have a look at verse 1. It's not wishful thinking. The people in the story didn't have faith. They needed evidence to prove that Jesus came back from the dead. They didn't expect dead people to come back from the dead. They didn't expect to see Jesus. They needed lots of evidence. Have a look at verse 1. There are the women. Talk to the people next to you. What were the women doing? What were they carrying? Just talk to the person next to you. What have they got? Verse 1. Okay, what have they got? Anyone? They've got spices. Here they are. They're walking to the tomb. They've got spices. They're not expecting to see a risen Jesus. They haven't got spices with them to make a curry to celebrate the fact that Jesus has risen from the dead. They've got spices there to open the tomb, to find a dead body, to rub into his dead, lifeless body to make it not smell for a bit longer. They haven't got spices there because they're expecting Jesus to be alive. They've got spices because they know that he'd be dead. They've planned for a dead Jesus, and that's what they're doing. Along they go, looking for a dead Jesus. And they get there, verse 2, and they find a stone rolled away. Verse 3, they go into the tomb where they know his body is. And what do they find? No body. And verse 4, we find them wondering. They're puzzled. They're there, and they do not know what's going on. They're puzzling. They're thinking, what's gone on? Where are the guards? How on earth is this massive stone being rolled away? Where's Jesus' body? What's happened to him? Why are they puzzled? Why are they wondering these things? Well, because the answer that doesn't pop into their head is, Jesus is alive. They're thinking, he's dead. Where's he gone? They didn't have faith that leapt to thinking he's alive. They had no faith, did they? Spices. They weren't expecting him alive. Wondering all these questions. They did not think he would be alive. Hence, we need the angels to come along and tell them what happened. They thought Jesus was dead. Dead, dead, dead. But they found out he was alive. We meet some angels, don't we? Verse 4. They're definitely angels. Two men, clothed, gleamed like lightning, stood beside them. You know the Daz advert? This probably ages people, doesn't it? Where's Ammo probably doesn't. Meggie definitely doesn't. Everyone else know the Daz doorstep challenge? Someone came to the door. Whose whites are whiter? Daz makes them white. It didn't make them this white, did it? Lightning, gleaming like lightning. I guess that's looking at like this. You can't look at light that's too bright. These guys are angels. That's the description, isn't it? Sent from God. An angel's a messenger. They're sent from God with a message. And what's the message? Well, verse 5. Why do you look for the living among the dead? I'm just going to read verses. I'll read the angel bit to you. Verse 5. The women, in their fright, they bowed down their faces to the ground. But the men said to them, why do you look for the living among the dead? He's not here, he's risen. Remember how he told you, while he was still with you in Galilee, the Son of Man must be delivered into the hands of sinful men, be crucified, on the third day be raised again. Then they remembered his words. Just talk to the person next to you. What's Jesus' main message? What is the message? Not Jesus' main message. What's the angel's main message they're getting across? And then we'll think about that for a second. Okay, just 1 minute. Okay, let's get back together. What's the angel's main message, anyone? Be brave. Do shout out. He's risen. That comes up three times. He's risen. Anything else? Yes. Jesus is alive. Yeah, he's risen. He's alive. And I think part of the message is he's done what he told you he'd do. Do you see that? So it's at the end. He's done what he told you he'd do seems to come across. Verse 8, then they remembered his words. When Jesus was alive, time and time and time again, three times in Mark's gospel, other times in other gospels, we find out that he said he had come to die. But not just stay dead, die then come back to life. Over and over and over again he said it. You get the impression that Jesus' trial, a bit of the evidence was, he said he'd destroy the temple and come back to life. When Jesus is dead, the chief priests, they put a guard on the tomb because they remembered Jesus' words. Jesus said that he'd die and come back to life, so they put a guard on the tomb. Everyone else knew that Jesus said this. They seemed to forget it. Interestingly, the disciples in verse 11 and 12, they're just the same as the women, aren't they? The women come after they've seen the angels. They come to the disciples and they say he's alive. And then they say, verse... Anyone see where it says nonsense? Verse 11. Well done. It's my dyslexia. There we go. Verse 11. It seemed like nonsense to them. Just nonsense. They weren't expecting it. They didn't think Jesus would come back from the dead. So the angels appear and they tell them what they needed to hear. And what they needed to hear was what Jesus told them. And you're right. Verse 5. The message is, verse 5, why do you look for the living among the dead? He's living. Verse 6, it tells us he's not here, he has risen. Verse 7, we find out on the third day he's raised again. The main message is, he told you he was going to die and come back to life, and he has. Now for them that was plenty to believe. They believed at that point and they ran back and told the disciples needed more. They needed to see Jesus face to face. Proof was needed, and proof was given. Why did they need proof? Because dead people coming back to life isn't an everyday thing. I haven't seen someone alive today who was dead yesterday. It would need a lot of proof to convince me of that, and it needed proof for them to see it. Now, most here are Christians, which is great. It's the best thing ever. Some here may not be Christians. Now, my mate James at Beer Club, he had the honesty and the humility to say, okay, let me look at the evidence. And I'm not giving him this book, but you can come and grab one of these off me later. I'll give it to you. It's a book about the proof of the resurrection. He's reading one that's a tiny bit bigger. He's got the humility to say, all right, Matt, I didn't look at the evidence. I've never looked at the evidence. Let me have a look at the evidence. And I think that's the best thing he'll ever do. And for you, I think it will be the best thing you ever do. Just checking out, did this man, who I believe to be God, actually come back from the dead? One guy I was looking at in Google this week. Do Google him later. All you need to type in is Sir Lion, okay? And then the first thing would be Sir Lionel Lutku. But just remember Sir Lion, okay? Sir Lionel Lutku, according to Google and according to the Guinness Book of World Records, he is the most successful lawyer ever. How did you become the most successful lawyer ever? Here's how, according to the Guinness Book of World Records. 245 occasions in a row, he got people off murder trials. He was a lawyer, and for 245 times in a row, he took people that were standing there, guilty, not guilty, he got all of them off. Quite impressive. That's how you become the best lawyer in the world. If you want to be 246, that's what you need to aim for. He's a good lawyer, the best according to the Guinness Book of World Records, smart, savvy. He looked at the facts and he came to the conclusion and got people off. Now, he's sort of from a Christian family, but wasn't really living a Christian life. He was challenged by a Christian. Use your clever, big, legal mind and look at the evidence of the resurrection. It took him a couple of years. I guess all those murder trial cases, you're a busy man. But after a couple of years, he said this. I'm going to read it word for word. It's got some big words. But he said, I say unequivocally that the evidence for the resurrection of Jesus is so overwhelming that it compels acceptance by proof, which leaves absolutely no room for doubt. That's what he said, Sir Lionel Lutku. Google him. There's lots of great facts about him. But amazing, he basically said, using my big savvy mind, my big clever legal mind, I looked at the evidence. I'm good at finding loopholes in arguments. When he looked at the evidence for the resurrection, he said, yeah, fair play. It happened. Do look at the evidence if you're not a Christian. It does stand up. And have humility like my mate James. Do check it out. It could be the best thing you ever do. I wasn't a Christian. I was blown away by the evidence. I pray that my mate James will be. But for the rest of us, what does it mean that Jesus rose from the dead? Well, it says big things about him, and it's got big implications for us. Firstly, what does it show us about Jesus? Well, it shows us he got it right. Can we have verse 7, please, Annabelle? Verse 7. This words that Jesus said in his life, but the angels said, "The Son of Man must be delivered over to the hands of sinners, be crucified, and on the third day rise again." Now, just talk to people next to you. What were the things Jesus said about himself in that verse? What had happened to him? Who was he? And then literally a few seconds go. Okay, sorry if it feels like you're back at school. Verse 7, what are the things Jesus said would happen to him? Or what does he say about himself? Anyone? Yeah, Anna? Or he was the Son of Man. That was one I thought people wouldn't spot. You've spoiled 2 minutes' time that you brought that out now. He's called himself the Son of Man. Great. Anything else he said about himself? He'd be betrayed and killed. Anything else? Correct, not killed, crucified. What else? And he'd rise again. Now, these things happened, didn't they? He said these things about him time and time again, and they happened. He did die. He definitely died. Killed by first-class executioners, some of the best in the world at the time at killing people. They killed him. He was dead. He said that would happen, and it happened. He said he'd rise from the dead, and it happened. And he called himself the Son of Man. Now, because he did die, and he did come back to life, they're pretty big claims. Because those two came true, the third one must be true as well. He called himself the Son of Man. Now, I'm Matt, my dad's called John. In one sense, I'm the son of a man. I'm the Son of Man, you could call me. But Jesus means it in a very different way. When he says, "I'm the Son of Man," it's a big Bible phrase from the Old Testament in the book of Daniel. And he's basically saying, "I'm the big deal in the universe." And it's a passage where it talks about God, and it's saying he is the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords, the Son of Man. He's the big deal. He's the King who sits on the throne, who rules over the universe. Everyone needs to look up to him. Everyone needs to bow down to him. Everyone needs to worship him. And actually, one day everyone will. That's who the Son of Man is. The King, the boss of the universe. And everyone will see it one day, and everyone will believe it one day, because it's true. And because Jesus did die, and because he did come back to life, the thing he says about who he is true. He's given us proof. He is the Son of Man. So whether we believe it or not, whether we like it or not, there is proof that Jesus is the Son of Man. That is who he is. He is the Son of Man, the ruler of the universe. That's who Jesus is, and that's got big implications for us. Do we treat him like it? Just think about that. Is that how you see Jesus in your day-to-day life? Do you see him as the Son of Man, the one seated in control, in power over everything that goes on in the universe, and therefore everything that happens in your life? Do you listen to him? Do you follow him? Do you treat him like the King? Do you treat him like your King in the way you act and feel and things you do, things you say, things you watch? Do you lift him up as your King? Now, this is true. He is the ruler of the universe. He is your ruler. Are we bringing our lives in line with that? That's the big thing it says about who Jesus is. Number one, he's alive. But number two, he's the Son of Man, the ruler of the universe. He's God, the ruler of the universe. And lastly, what does this mean for us? Now, hopefully you know this by now. Is Jesus dead? He's not dead. He's alive. And he says he's alive and he can offer life now and life forever to anyone who follows him. He's alive now and he offers that life. He offers a real living relationship that you can have now and forever with him. The thing you were made for, you and me were made to live in relationship with God. We were made to live in relationship with Jesus. And it's the thing that we long for, the thing that would give us satisfaction and joy and meaning. You can have it. I've got lots of non-Christian friends who just say to me, well, they're not satisfied in this, they're not fulfilled with this, constantly searching, seeking, trying new things because they're just not happy with what they've got. That's because they haven't got the thing they were made for, relationship with Jesus. And he's offering that. It's on offer for all of us, a living relationship. Now, if you're a Christian, are you enjoying that relationship? It's on offer. Do you enjoy it? Do you take it? Do you grasp it? Do you wake up thinking, I'm alive? Jesus is alive. My kids put me to shame every morning. They say, hello, God, when they wake up. They say, morning, mummy, morning, daddy. Hello, God. And that just shows God's alive, doesn't it? Very silly, small thing. First time I heard it, I was like, oh, they get it. Stupid old me. But do you walk through your life thinking he's alive? Do you even say hello to him in the morning? Do you acknowledge him throughout the day? If you're a Christian, you're in a living, active, alive relationship with someone else who is alive. You can talk to him. You can walk through the day with him. You can cry with him. You can burden him. You can find out what he's like from other Christians. You can find out what he's like from the Bible. He is alive, and he's offering a relationship with him. Are you enjoying that relationship? Come on, it's not a small deal. The God who made the world, the Son of Man, who's the King of the world, who everyone's going to bow down before one day, wants to be very close to you, very, very close to you, and walk through life with you. What do we do about it? Well, we switch on the early morning telly news while we're having breakfast, or we go through the internet and look at BBC Sport. We walk to work with the headphones in. We're busy at work, and then we have lunchtime, and we're so busy catching up with people, and we come home, we whack on a bit of telly, and we make some food, and we maybe go out with some friends and have a drink, and then we, I don't know, watch a bit of Netflix before we go to bed, or read a bit of the latest book, and then we turn out the light, and then we're snoring after we've thought through the day, and God's not really in it. But actually, he's offering loads. He wants to walk through your life with you, knowing you, and it's a real relationship. So I need to say to myself, Matt Pope, pull your finger out. Spend more time with him. Talk to him a bit more. Involve him a bit more, because he wants to be involved. A couple of other things, very briefly. Life now, not just relationship, but a life of pardon. When Jesus died on that cross and came back to life, he was dealing with our problem with God. He was dealing with our problem of sin. He came to put us right with him, and he did it by getting rid of sin once and for all forever. I deserve to be punished for my sin. And on the cross, Jesus dealt with that. And when he came back to life, he showed, it's dealt with. Your sin has been punished. Do you walk through life knowing you're free from feeling guilt and shame? That's what the resurrection proves. You've got life coming, not death coming. You've got pardon, not being condemned and put down. That's what's on offer. So don't walk through life feeling, ugh, but walk through life knowing peace. That's what the resurrection says. Peace with God, joy, a relationship with God. Pardon has been given. Life of freedom. What did Jesus do with sin? He beat it. When he died on the cross and came back to life, he dealt with sin, he beat it. He got rid of its power. So now I can say no to sin. Sin hasn't got power over me because Jesus came back from the dead. He died and came back from the dead to beat it. Now I can say no to sin. Now where's... Oh, Chris isn't here. Jesse's husband, Chris, he was asking me to go fly fishing with him earlier. And I will say no. I can think of nothing more boring, but don't tell him that. I'll let him down later. Huh? I can't imagine anything worse than fly fishing. But it's clever. He was getting excited, telling me about the flies that you make. You make these hooks with a thing on the top like a fly. And the more it looks like a fly, the better chances you've got of catching a fish. And what you do, I'm probably getting this wrong, hopefully he's not listening on the speaker outside, but you plonk it in the water and you bring it through the water like a fly. I didn't realise flies swam. I didn't want to tell him that at the time. But that's what you do. You bring it through the water like a fly in the water. But a fish sees it, and what does a fish think when it sees the fly? Who said that? Food. Thanks, Michael. It sees it and it thinks food. And it thinks yum, and over it goes, and what does it do? Eats it. But as soon as it's bitten it, what does it think? It doesn't think, I want more. That is the last thing it wants. There's a great big dirty hook. If fish thought, which I think they probably do, it thought, Whoops. Ow. It's deadly. That thing that looks so good is deadly. And we look at sin like the fly. We think it's attractive and appealing, but it's not. It's deadly. It's deadly like the hook. And Jesus has done everything that he needs to do to free us. He comes and lives in us by his Spirit to really help us to say no to it. He's beaten its power. I do not need to say yes to sin. It's beaten. And that's what the resurrection proves. I can say no to it. Now I'm reading a helpful book on sin at the moment. And it says, sin's too big a beast to deal with. So deal with one thing. And work hard throughout one day, working on one thing. I don't know what it is. Gossip or lust or whatever it is. Work on one thing and say, dear God, please help me. I don't want this to beat me today. And work on that one thing. And amazingly, as you work hard on that one thing, 50 other things sort of come along beside it and behind it. Now, why can you do that? Well, Jesus died and came back to life. He's alive. He's helping you now. He's beaten sin's power. It's the best thing ever. And there's more to come. Jesus offers life now. His life now. And amazingly, he offers life forever. Life that goes on and on and on and on, then a bit more, then a bit more, and forever and forever and forever. He offers life forever. He says, whoever believes in him, even though we die, he shall live. With him we can live. So Jesus was unique. He died and came back to life. But the Bible says, for his followers, he's the first of many. The first of many who are going to die and then come back to life. To experience great forever life with him. Someone once put it like this. Do you know when you see, has anyone seen Dam Busters? It's a good film about a bouncing bomb. It's really good. You should watch it. I'm not a geek. It is a good film. But this guy, Barnes Wallace, correct? There you go. Barnes Wallace, he develops this bomb that bounces along and it hits a dam. And great scene. It doesn't just blow up straight away. It hits it and then you get this crack. Then what do you get? Anyone? You can predict it. Out comes this tiny stream of water. And then what happens? A bigger crack. Then a bit more water. Then what happens? Well, then it all comes crashing down. And all the water comes flooding out. Now, Jesus was like the crack and the first bit of water. He beat death and he's come through it. But it's not the end. Seeing him beat death and come through, what do you know is going to happen to that dam? Well, more water is going to come through and more water and then... And Jesus offers the life that he's got now for all of us. Because he died and came back to life. We, when we die, can come back to life. It's the best thing. We can have life with God, face to face, relationship with him now and forever. The resurrection's got more to say, but that's the start. Do keep talking. Happy Easter. Jesus is alive. It is the best thing that has ever happened to you. Him dying and coming back to life is the best ever. Please enjoy that life now and forever. Now, I'm going to go and get the kids. Just talk to people next to you for a couple of seconds. One thing you want to remember about the resurrection and one change that it might make. I'm going to get the kids and they're going to come and join us.